Rashi's Vayigash 57:73 says Chassam Sofer, you know, when tzaddikim talk to evil people, they try to make sure not to talk as much to evil people as they can. Meaning, they try to make sure that their speech not only is to the person in front of them, but also to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the exact same time. That there's like a tefillah within their speech. So it's really not just to the person in front of them. And throughout the whole Torah, this is what Yaakov did when he spoke to Lavan. This is what Yaakov did when he spoke to Esav. Yosef HaTzadik does this when he talks to Paro. Every time that something like this happens, you're really not talking to them, the person opposite you. You're really talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu while making it seem that you're talking to the person in front of you. It's hard to see that sometimes, but it's true here by Yehuda's speech. Yehuda thought he was talking to a Russian. He didn't know who Yosef HaTzadik was, and he figured that the person in front of him was a Russian.
What here makes Yosef a Russian? What has Yosef done to make
accused him?
Accused him, like he was caught red-handed.
Of miraglin.
Okay, fine.
And in Yehuda's mind...
But in the end, he acquitted us.
So in Yehuda's mind, I would assume that they knew that Binyamin was innocent. Binyamin was a tzaddik.
Oh, fine. You know, but looking from Yosef's perspective, they caught this red-handed...
Again, miraglin. Put him in jail for 3 days for no reason. Sent him back and said, you've got to bring back your other brother for no reason. That would be the answer. You know, something like that. But regardless, this is the idea of Yehuda looking at Yosef. And what? What? Oh, we had not only Abu Zara, Kishuv, for sure, Kishuv. Yeah, for sure, there was Kishuv involved.
Is there a Kishuv?
If it's
Abu Zara,
then
yeah. The accused. Yeah. The Shvatim themselves. Yeah, but still, without a question, there's something going on. There's no question they thought that Yosef was a Russian. Now, Yehuda was speaking to Yosef in front of him. But at the same time, he was hinting through a tefillah. What was that tefillah that he was saying? So here's what it was. Here's Hakdama. We have a prayer that we say every slichos. Hate Elokai Oznecha. Turn your ear to me, O Lord. Turn your ear to me. What does that mean? What does it mean to turn your ear? By a human being, obviously it means turn your ear like that. But by a God, what does that mean? Either HaKadosh Baruch Hu hears or he doesn't hear. Whatever that means, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's aspect, there's no idea of Hate Elokai Oznecha. What does it mean that you should turn your ear and hear? So what it means is the following. What Daniel was saying when he said Hate Elokai Oznecha means, when one davens in Chutz La'aretz, when you daven outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Tsar, the angel of the nation that you are in, is able to make a separation between your prayer and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Only when you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Tsarim have the ability to stop it and make sure it doesn't go through. What we're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do is to turn himself, so to speak, to allow the speech to go through those Tsarim, to break through the clouds, so to speak, and let the prayers go straight up to him and not be interrupted by the malachim. That's what we're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do. One way of doing that is by showing Hashem that we have no ability to do anything because of these people that are in charge of us. There are evil people that are here in front of us, and because of this evil king, I have no ability to daven normally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so therefore turn your ear to me and hear me by getting rid of these evil people or doing something else. Just allow me to be. That's what you're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do. Esther did exactly this. Esther invited Haman to the party with Achashverosh and davened Keli, Keli, Lama Azavtani. She specifically wanted to bring them close and show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I can't do anything with them right now, so get rid of them so that I can daven to you. I'm davening to you even when they're in charge of me and forcing me to do other things. I'll daven to you even when they're not here in front of me. Even when there are evil people that aren't in front of me. It's a way of knocking down the person who's in charge of you. Yehuda asked for the exact same thing. Yedaber no ba'oznei avodecha. Adraduber ba'oznei adini, I'm sorry. Let your servant speak a word in the ears of my master as a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let me speak directly to your ear, not let the Tsarim get involved. You're wondering why I'm putting Yosef in charge and why I'm giving such kavod to Yosef, making him sound so covetic. Al yichar apcha bi'avdecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't get angry at me that I'm doing such a thing. Why? Kichamocha kefaro. Because in this world, in the world that I'm living in right now, with everybody around me, I have no choice but to consider him like Paro. Consider you like Paro. That just like Paro is in charge of the nation, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of the nation. He's worried about what's going to happen in any other way. That there's nothing else I can do except beg that HaKadosh HaKadosh Baruch Hu will listen to me at the same time. In this whole speech, he's trying to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're sorry for what we did in selling Yosef HaTzadik. That whole speech is going to be revolved around that type of idea, and that's what he's trying to do. Now it worked. HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened, made Yosef HaTzadik cry after hearing such a speech. Yosef HaTzadik was too much, he was too verklempt. And once that happened, that's when he admitted to the Shvatim, Ani Yosef Odavichai. But there was one thing wrong. The fact that he said, Ki Kamocha Kifaro, sounded wrong, says Chassam Sofer. He should have said, Pharaoh is like you. Pharaoh Kamocha. When speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should have said Pharaoh is like you, meaning the ultimate is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not the ultimate is Pharaoh. Because he said it this way, then there was a punishment given over to Yehuda. And here was the repercussion. Pharaoh received 1/5 of all of the money and the land that the Mitzrayim owned. He owned 1/5 of everything. Everybody had to give 1/5 to Pharaoh, and then eventually that went to the priests and whatever it was, a concept of Meister, but giving 20% instead of 10%. A concept of that. So too, when the Jews left Mitzrayim, 1/5 of Bnei Yisrael went to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. 4/5 died. And it was the Chamushim Alu Bnei Yisrael Min Mitzrayim. And that was what Yehuda was davening for within this field. Because he worded it the way he did, only 1/5 of the Jews ended up coming outside of Mitzrayim. That was all that happened. It was a sad, sad situation. Okay, that's number one. Number two. Let's get into a real bunch of silly questions, but they seem to be really interesting questions over here. Number one, Yehuda claims, right, that we went up to our father, and our father assumes, Ach Torov Torah. But Omar, he said, Ach Torov Torah, Valori Sivad Hena. One guy is left, it's Yosef HaTzadik, and he said, Yaakov, our father, said, Ach Torov Torah, he's being torn up, he's being destroyed, Valori Sivad Hena, and we have not seen him up until now. Ulakachtam Gamezeh, and now you want to take this guy, Me'im Panai, from in front of my face, the Koro Asone, a tragedy will occur to Binyamin. Now I can't let you have that happen. Number one, Yaakov originally didn't only say Ach Torov Torah. He said Ach Torov Torah, right? And then he said Chaya Ra'a Achlasu, a wild animal has eaten him. What did it mean torn up? He meant he was torn up by an animal and then a wild animal ate him. It's not just Ach Torov Torah. So number one, it's not that big of a kasha, but just Stam, why wouldn't it add on that a Chaya Ra'a ate him? Why not say that? It could be answered on its own. You could answer that on its own, but that's question number one. Number two, why even mention this? Why even say what Yaakov said about Yosef when Yosef was lost? Do we really need to know what happened? Does Yosef need to know what Yaakov was thinking when he saw that he was lost? Is that really necessary to know exactly what he was saying? That's number two. Why did he have to say what Yaakov was thinking at the time? Number three. The Lord, what do you say about him? I haven't seen him up until now. Of course you haven't. He's dead. He was torn up by an animal. I understand. What does that mean, below Isi Bad Hena? If Yaakov was saying he was torn up, Lower Isi Bad Hena is totally superfluous. There's no reason to go into the fact that you haven't seen him up until now. What would be the purpose? Good. Which gets to our question number four. Ach is a weird word. Ach means, but he was torn up. What does it mean, but he was torn up? Before it was just Torov Torah Yosef. What's the Ach? The Ach sounds like, but he was torn up, meaning he thought he was torn up. It's not even a subject anymore. So what is it? Where did that come from? Where did that Ach come from? I have such an answer. This is unbelievable, this answer. I read this answer, and again, this could have been that I died. I don't remember. It's the parsha where there's Chiyas HaMeisim after the Shvatim Yosef HaTzadik, and they died afterward. They died after meeting him, and then they had to have Chiyas HaMeisim. It's possible it's Chiyas HaMeisim. I don't believe that I actually lived after I read this pshat. It's very possible. It's possible I died. That's the best shot ever. So if you die, Harry, it's okay. We can revive you. It'll happen. The Gemara says, Yosef told the Shvatim on the way back to go get Yaakov, he told them, don't learn. Don't learn. He said to them, you're not allowed to learn while you're on the way home. That's Akasha. What do you mean you can't learn on the way home? The halakha is, you 100% have to learn when you're on the road. It's a mission on Pirkei Avos. If two people are on the road and they're not talking and learning, they're deserving to be burnt. They're deserving to be burnt. There's no way that you can go through without learning any Torah. The Gemara asked such a question. How could Yosef suggest that they shouldn't be learning on the way back? You have to learn. Everybody has to learn. So the Gemara answers, there's a difference between Bikias and Ian. Bikias will protect you, and for sure you got to learn Bikias, but don't learn Ian. Why can't you learn Ian? What's the problem with learning Ian? What's the problem? So what does Rashi say over there? Rashi says you can't learn Ian because your mind will get too into it. You're going to forget where you are. You're going to see you're in the middle of nowhere. And then you're just going to get lost. You have no idea how to get back. You won't find where you are. All of a sudden you'll find yourself in the middle of the Sahara Desert. And you'll be like, oh, I figured out the sugya. And then you have no idea where you are. That's the problem. So Yosef told the Shvatim, go back. I don't want you to get lost. Eventually you'll find your way back. But I want Yaakov Avinu here as soon as possible. So go back to Yaakov Avinu and go bring him. Do not learn Iyun on the way home. Learn Bikiyas. Learn Bikiyas. Go over all Baba Kama. Go ahead. Go through all the Daf and Baba Kama. But I don't want you to learn Iyun at all because then you'll get lost and I don't want that to happen. That's what he ended up telling him. Okay, this is the greatest pshat. At first, Yaakov Avinu thought that an animal had eaten Yosef. He saw the cloak, he saw the blood, and he said, Oyvei, chaya ra akolasu. Taruf Taraf, he was torn apart, and chaya ra akolasu, that a wild animal must have eaten him, and he's dead. The great tzaddikim always appear to other great tzaddikim in dreams. When a great tzaddik dies, then a great tzaddik who is close to that tzaddik will always see him in a dream after his death. So Yaakov Avinu was waiting with open arms, waiting for Yosef to appear to him in a dream. And when he appeared to him in a dream, says the Chasam Sofer, he was going to be able to talk to him again. So he was begging to see him in a dream. And a year passed, and 2 years passed, and 3 years passed, and he hadn't seen him in a dream yet. And he couldn't figure out why. So he figured, it must be Yosef never died. He never died. He was bitten by an animal. And he had blood all over the cloak. But then he must have gone crazy. The same concept of a person being so into their learning, into Iyun, it could be, number one, Yosef was so into his learning, he found himself lost in the forest. All of a sudden found himself near a wild animal. The wild animal bit him, which gave him some type of amnesia. And he wasn't able to find anywhere around, and he forgot everything about who he was, and there was. There is an animal like this, by the way. The Chasam Sofer says there's an animal called a Bartolus. Everyone remember the Bartolus? It's mentioned Bava Kama in the Mishnah. It's mentioned elsewhere. The Bartolus is one of the animals that doesn't have domestication. Right? It's one of the chayos that's out there. A Bartolus bite, according to the Chasam Sofer, apparently makes you forget everything about where you are and makes you forget everything you have. It gives you amnesia. So he assumed the reason why there was blood in the cloak was from this Bartolus. How did he get lost to meet up with the Bartolus? The answer is he must have been involved in Iyun. He's involved in learning an Ach Torov Torah. But he wasn't killed. He wasn't dead. It's Ach, but Torov Torah. His mind was gone. His mind was gone. How do I know that his mind was gone? That he has no ability to know where he is and he doesn't know what's going on? Because Lo Ra'isi Vadhena. Because I haven't seen him in a dream up until now. That's the pshat behind the pasuk. Isn't that a great pshat? That's a pshat that you can send home to your mother. That's a pshat that you send home and you're like, this means, that was an unbelievable pshat.
Yeah,
and that's the idea. You might have.
I thought the whole thing that we knew that Yosef in a way, Yaakov in a way knew that Yosef didn't die because he wasn't able to be happy. He wasn't able to move on.
See, the pasuk shad that everybody says is that he wasn't finished mourning, right? When you mourn after a year, eventually everything goes away. For 22 years, Yaakov didn't feel it going away, so he realized it must be that he's not really gone. He's not out of this world. Here, the pshat according to the Chasam Sofer is so much simpler. He knew he should appear to him in a dream. There was no reason why not. Yaakov was a great tzaddik. Yosef tzaddik was a great tzaddik. He knew that. So why wouldn't he appear to him in a dream? How come he was seeing Avram and Yitzchak, but he wasn't seeing Yosef tzaddik? It must be that he's alive in this world. This is a pshat now. But then if he's alive in this world, how could he not come home? If he's alive in this world, why wouldn't he send me a message? It must be he has amnesia. How do you get amnesia? Ach Torov Torah. And that's the pshat.
It's only a one-way message system, right?
I would assume.
You can't have Avram, Yitzchak,
or Joseph. Well, remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was holding that back from Yaakov, so they weren't answering that for Yaakov. So they weren't giving him an answer, so Yaakov wouldn't know anything like that. And that also answers another thing, which a final little idea. Binyamin HaTzadik, right? So Yaakov was so overprotective about Binyamin HaTzadik. He won't let him go because he's afraid of him dying. Now, I don't mean to say this in a bad way. Obviously, you don't want your kid to die. But it seems he was overprotective because he knew that he had 12 children and he had been promised that as long as his 12 children were alive, then he wasn't going to see Gehenna. So I don't understand. What was he worried about over here? Yosef HaTzadik's already dead in his mind. If he's dead, he's no longer saved from Gehenna. So I understand you don't want your little son to die. He's 30. Binyamin's about 30 years old. Okay, let him go. What's the problem? What is he really worried about? The answer is, no, he was mamish worried that Binyamin was such a homebody, so to speak, a Yoshev Ohalim, like Yaakov Avinu himself was. He wasn't used to being outside. He is more likely to die than any of the Shvatim if he goes out. And he thought right now that all 12 brothers were still alive. Where's Yosef? I don't know. But he must still be alive. But something goes on. I didn't even want to go into the next part, which is that he mamish thought that Yosef, Yaakov Avinu realized he was being punished for the 36 years he had been away from his father. Once the years started passing and it got up to year 22, he's like, alright, it's gotta be it. He was gone from his parents for 22 years plus another 14 years that he was in Yeshiva's Shem Be'Ever. He thought he was being punished for all 36 years. He did not expect to see Yosef for another 14 years afterward. Another 14 years until after everything was said and done. He was expecting to be there for 36 years without seeing Yosef. He realized there was a Mida Keneged Mida here. But that, well, in and of itself, is just, it's a crazy pshat from the Ksam Sofer. Okay, now I got another crazy pshat. Do you guys remember the Bala Turim from Ben Zikunim back in Parshas Vayeshev? I haven't said it in years. Actually, I looked back at my notes. The last time I said it was 2007. So if anybody remembers what I said in 2007, then here you go. This is what the Bala Turim says. Yosef was a Ben Zikunim, right? He was a child of the old age of Yaakov. You know, says the Bala Turim, he learned 5 Siddurim of Mishnayos with Yaakov Avinu. Zikunim, Zayin, Kut, Nun, Yud, Mem, stands for 5 names of the Siddurim in the Gemara Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph is already Hillel. 5 things. Zayin, Zroyim, Kut, Kudshim, Nun, Nashim, Yud, Yeshuos, which is a reference to Nezikin, Mem, Moed. And that's what he had learned together with his father. That he had learned those 5 Siddurim, and that's why he's called a Ben Zikunim, because he learned those 5 Siddurim of Mishnayos together with his father back in Eretz Yisrael. That's what he learned with them. So everybody asked the Kasher. What about, what am I missing?
Taharos.
Very good. I was hoping somebody would get it. We're missing Taharos. So what happened to Taharos? 2 answers. The Imre Emes, son of the Sfat Emes, says that Taharos you need to learn alone before you get a Mesorah from a Rebbe. First you got to learn it alone, then you get to learn it from a Rebbe. That's how it goes. But the Megali Amukos says something even deeper. To learn Seder Taharos, you need to know what Tuma is. And when Yosef HaTzadik lived with Yaakov Avinu, he had no idea what Tuma was. There was no Shaitis to Tuma, even though obviously he was around Lavan for the first 6 years of his life. When he was learning with Yaakov, he had no shaykhus to Tuma. And because of that, he didn't know it until he went down to Egypt and saw the Tuma there. That's when he was able to learn Taharos. So he sent back to Yaakov Avinu 6 eglos tzav, 6 cows that would be sent back with him. This 6 eglos tzav was a reference to the 6 Siddurim. He told Yaakov, I've learned all 6 Siddurim now. I've learned even Taharos because I know what Tuma is. Sounds over as a 3rd answer. To understand certain parts of Kutchin and Nushim, you need to know Taharos as well. Kudshim, you need to know certain parts of Taharos. If you go through parts of Menachos and certain parts of Bechoros and Erechim and Tumura, there are parts that deal with Taharos. And Nushim as well. Included in Nushim, aside from the Nida Shilas, there's a lot of things that go into different parts of Taharos that deal with those types of things. For Binyamin to know all of these Mesechtos, he needed to know Taharos well, and that would help him understand Kudshim and Nushim. So what was Binyamin called in this week's parsha? He was a Ben Zikunim Katan. Zion, Zroyim, Kuf, Kudshim, Nun, Nashim, Yud, Yeshuos, Mem, Moed, Katan, Kudshim, Taharos, Nashim. He completed Kudshim, Taharos, and Nashim, says Aksam Sofer. That's what he ended up becoming, and that's what he had learned when he had been together with Yaakov. You know, Binyamin was a little bit more. He had learned more with Yaakov. He had more time to be able to do it. That's what ended up happening. Okay, everybody knows what happens after Yosef HaTzadik reveals himself. Ani Yosef Odevichai. All the Shoftim are shocked, right? They're shocked. They want to kill Yosef. They had Chias HaMeisim. They came back and Yosef HaTzadik shows them the Bris Milah and shows them that he speaks Lashon HaKodesh. The Bris Milah to show that he's not from the Bnei Esav, and Lashon HaKodesh to show that he's not from Yishmael. Okay, so he showed them those 2 things. So he's not from those, and he showed them both those things together. He then goes up to Binyamin and cries on Binyamin's shoulder, and Binyamin cries on Yosef's shoulder. Chazal tell us, the reason why is because Yosef saw that Binyamin would lose the Bati HaMikdash, which were built on his property and Binyamin's city, and Yosef would lose a Mishkan, which was made on his property, that was on his city. So they cried on each other's shoulders. He then went up to each one of the brothers, kissed them, and then cried on them. What in the world happens? What does that mean? What's the Torah telling us? Obviously, a meeting between brothers after all these years, showing that Yosef HaTzadik was okay with what they did at the end of the day. That he said, look, this is for the best, and he understood it. Okay, granted, that's going to be emotional. I understand that completely, for the brothers to realize they were wrong. I can understand the crying and everything like that. The Torah says, tell us that. We have to know that. And what in the world are they bringing up the Beis HaMikdash now? The Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed right now? Well, all of a sudden he sees Binyamin and he's like, oh, the Beis HaMikdash. Where did that come from? Where in the world did that come from? Why was he thinking about that when he sees Binyamin for the very first time? Okay. Here's the deal. Everybody knows that there really should have only been one Golus. The Golus should have lasted 400 years. That was the promise to Avraham Avinu. 400 years. They should have been in Mitzrayim the entire time. And had they been in Mitzrayim for 400 years, everything would have been done. There would have been no other issue of Golus. There would have been no Golus Edom, no Golus Yavan, no Golus Madeo Paras, no Golus Babel. It never would have existed. Everything would have been in Golus Mitzrayim, and that's it. But we couldn't last there, as we all know. We couldn't last there for another 190 years. We would have all gone to the 50th Shaar HaTuma, the 50th level of Tuma, and therefore the last 190 years were broken up into other Golus. They were made into other Golus. Now what's the pshat? That's all based on a Medrash Rabba, by the way. Perek Mem Dalid. Halacha Yud Tes. That's what it was. Now we all know what Yosef was trying to do here. He was trying to accomplish the dreams. That's why he lied to the brothers. That's why he called them Meraglim. That's why he tried to get Binyamin down. He's trying to accomplish the dreams. He's trying to get Yaakov down. For what purpose? We've said before, the purpose was in order to save them from a terrible Golus under another nation that he wouldn't be in charge of. He figured, if he could fake it his entire life, he would be the king of Egypt. They would have no idea. He'd have kids who would be in charge just like him, because everybody would think he was Egyptian. And after 400 years, where he was taking care of the Jews, making sure that bad things happened to them, but they wouldn't have anything terrible happen to them, where he would be in charge, all of a sudden his great-great-great-grandson would get up, tear off the mask, and be like, hey, let's go. We're all ready to go back to Eretz Yisrael. After 400 years, that was the plan of Yosef. He couldn't go through with it because he kept crying. He couldn't handle being able to see all the Shvatim Binyamin and his father Yaakov, you know, and not reveal to them who he was. Okay, Binyamin realized already that this was Yosef. Binyamin saw through the ruse as soon as he saw Yosef. But Yesh Peh, everybody knows that's the stone of Binyamin, the Yashpeh, the Jasper. Yesh Peh, Binyamin had a mouth and refused to tell anyone. He wouldn't tell anyone that this was Yosef. But the first minute that Binyamin looked at Yosef, he said, that's my brother. He knew it immediately. Yosef then told him, I have a plan. I'm going to put the Gevia in your bag. And he told them, the Medrash says he told them straight out what was going to happen. So when he was caught with the cup, he wasn't shocked. There was no denial on Binyamin's part. He played the part perfectly. He was silent to the point where he convinced the Shvatim that he had stolen the cup. The Shvatim looked at him and said, oh my gosh, maybe he actually did steal, as you said before, Binyamin. They looked at him and said, I can't believe this kid just stole the cup. They had no idea, because Binyamin played the part. He knew it was Yosef, and Yosef had already told him what his plan was going to be once he realized who it was. Now that's a problem. What's the problem? That meant there was one issue with Golus that was never taken care of. Golus was supposed to be with Yaakov and the Shvatim coming down in chains. They were supposed to be in pain. There was supposed to be a terrible Golus for 400 years when they were in Mitzrayim, and it never happened. Yaakov Avinu came down with wagons from Paro. The Jews lived in a city of Goshen that was separate from the rest of Mitzrayim. Binyamin knew about it the entire time. The Shvatim had it easy in front of everybody. Granted, they had it hard when they were being accused of Meraglim, when they were thrown in jail, when Shimon was thrown in jail. Granted, that ended up happening, but with everything else, it was a little bit easier. Yosef HaTzadik realized, now that I couldn't hold back, now that I gave in, and that I'm not going to start the Golus of Mitzrayim for 400 years, that I'm not doing it, they need more Golus. So he saw the destruction of the first and the second Beis HaMikdash, which would lead to Golus Babel, eventually Paras and Madai, eventually Yavan, and eventually Edom. And he looked at Binyamin and said, it's my fault. I gave in. I have such a problem. Binyamin at the same time realized that at the same time, Mishkan Shiloh was also going to be destroyed. Because they weren't able to give in now, because they weren't able to hide it, so to speak, now, because they weren't able to bring it into Golus right now, more Golus, more exiles were going to happen, and there was going to be destruction. So they cried on each other's shoulders. Because the Shvatim had such tsar in the beginning, Yosef looked at the brothers and he kissed all of them. He said, you guys aren't going to have to go through all this trouble that I and Binyamin are going to have to go through. It's not going to be the same by you. Your goals is not going to be as harsh as mine and Binyamin's are, because you're not going to have a destruction in your land like we're going to have a destruction in our land because of what happened. Well, obviously, it was a Makkah Medina. And then he looked at them and he said, and he cried. And he said, but now it's going to be easy for you. You're going to live here for the next, I mean, think about it. How many years of Shibud did they have in Mitzrayim? How many years of actual servitude did they have out of those 210 years? Gemara says 86, maybe 116. Wow. Maybe 116. It's 86 years, granted. But out of the gullus that they were supposed to get of 210 years, they didn't get most of it. They only had, what is it? It's 124 years of gullus. And granted, obviously that's bad. But it's so much less than what they could have had. So we kiss them, that you don't have to have it so bad. You don't have anything destroyed in your land. But he cried for them. He said, you're still going down. You're still going to have it bad later on. And you're still going to be in gullus. You're still going to die. And it's all because of me. Said Yosef, and that's what he was crying on them for. Yeah, what were you going to say?
That he was telling the army that it's going to be a longer gullus as well with the Nekud. And it's the only place in the entire Torah.
Yeah.
Because the Binyamin is spelled Mila'el and not Mila'ra. So it's Binyamin instead of Binyamin.
I love Spartan.
And that's an extension of the words to maybe, like, well, I already fought in the next, which is like 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Okay, meaning it will be a longer gullus.
It'll be a longer gullus. Very, very good. Only. It's not a spelling difference. It's a way of pronouncing the word.
Rachel really wanted to name him Ben-Oni, right?
Ben-Oni, correct. Yeah, and that's what he really should have been named, if not for the fact that Yaakov didn't want to be reminded of the sadness every time he called him Binyam, every time he called him Ben-Oni, so he renamed him Binyamin.
Okay.
Yaakov called him. I think it was a little bit more than that. Benji?
Benji.
I think that would be a little bit, yeah. Then, no, that might be.
But have we exceeded the amount of time in the subsequent
development? Because 190 years stretched out of what the Shibud should have been was a lot.
Well,
and we should have gone through a lot of terrible things.
2,000 years of destruction of the Beit HaMikdash is the Holocaust.
It must not be.
It's kind of like my cable.
It must not be.
I'm pretty sure I'm owed a credit.
You're owed a credit? Fine, when you go up to Shemayim, it's 120, you'll go up to Shemayim, and they're going to look at you, and they'll be like, yeah?
We have a little...
No, that's fine. I'll go ahead. And I'll go up there. David Von Samek, you know, he told me that I get credit up there. I'll go for it. I'm going to say it. We'll see what ends up happening. And then afterwards, hopefully I'll come back in a dream, because I'm a little bit older than you, so I'll come back in a dream. So we still have a little bit. Oh, but it only happens if I tip Deacon, and I'm not. All right. Well, I'll give it to somebody else. It's not for you. It's for me. So I'll send somebody else who's a tzaddik down to you, and then it'll work out well.
I think there's something in common that they always correspond with each other. How come we don't hear more about these correspondences? Once in a while, I hear a story about our tzaddik, and
usually it's not for anybody's ears.
What?
Usually it's not for anybody's ears. It happens. It definitely does happen. There's no question that it happens. I could say more, but like, there's no question that these types of things happen.
Is there like a rate of inflation you can like?
No, dude, come on. Pasuk Ches, Perek Mem Zayin Pasuk Ches. We're going to end with this word, but this is a powerful word. Vayomer Paro El Yaakov, Kama Yemei Shnei Chayecha. How old are you? Imagine that. Like, oh my gosh, you're so old, he said to Yaakov. Paro looks at Yaakov, he says, you're the oldest man I've ever seen. How old are you? Vayomer Yaakov, you know what's funny, by the way? According to the Medrash, Og was sitting right next to Paro as this happened. And Paro says to Og, and says, I thought you said that Avram Avinu was dead. This guy looks like Avram Avinu. I remember Avram Avinu. So Paro's much older than Yaakov. And so is Og. They're both much older. And he looks at Yaakov and I'm like, man, you look ancient. And they're like, look at you. Like, I can't imagine. But either way, how old are you? But Yomer Yaakov Paro, the days of the years of my sojournings, Shloshim Asana, 130 years, Ma'at, a few, the Royim, and evil. Were the days of my life, and I still have not reached the years of the life of my fathers when they sojourned throughout the land. So I still haven't reached there. Who would say that? Yaakov Avinu, the perfect man, the man who doesn't have anything wrong. I mean, Yaakov Avinu, he's the Bechir Sheva Avos. Who would say that? How could he have made such a mistake? I know, because I'll say he lost 33 years of his life. How could you have said that? How would you have made such a mistake?
They said something like, man, you look old. Yeah, yours
have been
easier.
Okay, no. So say back, you look older. Say back something like that. Go with a diss right back at Paro. Don't say about you, my years were Ma'at Barayim. How do you say such a thing? Listen to this word. Paro was into a little bit of muscle when he said this, says Chassam Sofer. He says to him, aren't you afraid? You're old. You're going to die in this land. You're going to die in Tommy land. You're not going to be able to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Aren't you worried you're going to be die here and you're going to die here and you're not going to be able to be brought back to your homeland to be buried? That's what he was asking. So Yaakov had to answer that. Why am I not worried that I'm going to be buried here? Why am I not worried about that? So he gave him three times. Do you have to worry about trying about to die? Three. There are three instances where you have to actually worry about it that you may actually come to die. Number one, if you're within 5 years of your parents' death. That's number one. If you're within 5 years of your parents' death, you have to worry about it. Number two, if you've enjoyed all the good things in this world, everything that the world has to offer, you've had everything good in this world, and there's nothing more you can get, then number two, that's when you would die. Number three, you've had so much pain in this world, you just want to get out of here already. You had so much pain, that's when a person is getting ready to die. If you don't have any of those three, you don't have to worry about dying. You've got quite a bit to live. Okay? Now, Yaakovino knew he was going to live at least another 17 years. His question was how much longer he was going to live. For number three, he said, maybe I've had so much pain, I just want to get out of here. Mats. The amount of years I've lived here are so little. I could live here for another billion years. The amount of years that I've had, no, I could be here for so much longer. I've been here for so little. I want to be here for so much longer. So don't think that I've had so much pain I just want to get out of here. Number two, you said, I've enjoyed all the good things in this world. Ryan, there were some things that happened that were pretty bad. I haven't enjoyed all the good things in this world. I haven't enjoyed being together with my children for that long. There are some things that happened to me that were Ryan. That were Ryan, and that's the reason why I'm not ready to die yet. That's why he said it. Number three, I'm not within 5 years of my parents. Now, Rivka is a bit of a kasha, how old she was. But let's say Rivka died at the age of 121. Okay? 121. At that time, he was 130. He was outside of 5 years of Rivka. He was nowhere close to Avraham Avinu. He didn't have to worry about being within 5 years of his parents. So he didn't have to worry about that.
5 years of the age of what your parents
are? 5 years of your parents' age. So if she died at 121, you have to worry from 116 to 126. Right? And then his father was 180, so 175 to 185. But you don't have to worry about anything else. I mean, there's no other worry. It doesn't mean you can't.
I'm worried 5 years prior to your parents' death.
How can you?
You don't know when they're
dead. No, when they die. Meaning whatever their age is when they die. 120, hopefully.
Your age at that point.
Yeah, your age at that point. That's the pshat. So he said that's the reason why I was able to go outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's how I could live here in Mitzrayim. I'm not worried about that. So why was he punished? All he was doing was answering Paro's taina. Paro had a claim, and he gave the three answers. The reason why he said Ryan is because he was trying to answer why he wasn't worried. He didn't have all these good things happening. The answer is, he shouldn't have said the word Ryan. He should have said the word lo tovim. Something like that. Should have said it a little bit better. He was right to have said what he said. He was right because the whole point of it was to answer Paro's claims. So he's right to have said it, but he should have said lo tovim. Saying the word that my years are Ryan, even though he meant it in a different sense, makes a chilul Hashem. It makes people think who misunderstand him, oh, he really doesn't like his life. So why did Yaakov say it that way? So why would he have said it that way? Why would he have messed up? Why didn't he say lo tovim? I got two answers. Number one, you know, there's halacha and psachim. You shouldn't say bad words. We know that, right? You shouldn't have nivel peh. So whenever the Torah goes about, instead of saying the word tameh, sometimes it goes around and it says lo tahor. Right? It'll say it that way. So it's a negative instead of a negative of a good rather than a positively bad. Right? That sometimes it'll do that. So maybe he didn't want to speak to a Rasha like Paro. Normally, he would have said lo tovim, because that's the better way of speaking. But he didn't want to speak extra words to a Rasha like Paro. Since he didn't want to speak extra words to a Rasha like Paro, he said the quickest thing he could, getting out of him, instead of saying lo tovim, he said the word ra'im. Because that's what he meant to say. He meant to answer Aparo's question, but he had to say it as soon as he could. Or, some sofer, I never knew this. He wanted his words to be a multiple of seven. You know, if a person makes sure that every sentence that he says is a multiple of seven, you are guaranteed a segula to protect yourself. Anybody else know that?
33 is not a multiple of seven.
It was the first couple words were not his. Kami Mei Shnei Chayecha, we're all Paros. What he said, Yemei Shnei Migurai, Shloshim Ma'at Shana, Ma'at Barayim, Hayu, Yemei Shnei Chayai, Velo Hisigu Es, Yemei Shnei Chayai, Abosai, Bimei Migurehen. I think that's 21. I think I counted that up correctly.
So that's why Jesse.
That's not the reason why. That's what it ends up being. He goes into 147, the years of Yaakovina's life, 21 times 7. 21, the shame of Ahiyah, by the way. This is the shame that was used in order to save Mitzrayim, times 7. Avraham Avinu, 175, is 25 times 7. David Melech is 70, 7 times 10 altogether. He should have lived another 33 years. 17 plus 33, he should have lived another 50 years and died at the age of 180, which denotes perfection, Yovel. But he didn't get to live it. Instead, he lived according to multiple of 7, since he used multiples of 7 within his words. That's what it ended up being. Crazy little shot. My mom just can't even say it. And by the way, how many words was the sentence over here? 21. It was 21. 21 times 7. He's his years, 147. Now we have another reason. It's not that he lost 33 years of his life. He specifically wanted 7 times 21 to give himself extra life, and that's why he couldn't say the word lo tovim, because that would have been 22. That wouldn't have given him the segula to protect himself for the rest of his life. You knew. That's Tom Silver. One of that, guys, let's just go very quickly. The summary is, tzaddikim, when why we said why Yehuda was really talking to HaKadosh Baruch when he was talking to Yosef, ach torov torat, that Yosef had gone crazy. That's why he hadn't returned, that he literally had gone crazy. That's what he had thought, that he had not been killed. We said the Baal HaTorim with Ben Zikunim by Binyamin, he was a Ben Zikunim, the crying and the kissing and the hints to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, because now the Golos was not going to be completed, and how Yaakov could have said what he did in front of Paro. He had his answers. He was trying to answer Paro's problem. Stop with that, guys. Have a